Greetings, geeks, and welcome to our Summer Blockbuster podcast series. I'm Regina McMenemy, the lead ambassador for the Geek Embassy.
And I'm Rhonda Oglesby, the wildcard ambassador.
And this is episode 163, recorded on July 20th, 2016. For this podcast season, we are watching blockbuster summer movies. Each month through August, we will select a new movie and then see, analyze, and celebrate and critique that movie. This month, Rhonda and I both saw Ghostbusters.
And we'll close out the show with some streaming recommendations for your summer vacation downtime.
So the internet went absolutely crazy when the trailer for this Ghostbusters came out.
Yep.
I mean, it lost its collective digitized mind.
Yes.
And it was months ago because we were on Studio FUBAR talking about it.
Yes.
And that was March.
Oh, don't ask me that. Date and times are not my thing unless I have my calendar out.
You don't have a spreadsheet of all the appearances we've made on other shows. So there was a lot of hype about it, and there's lots of talk about potentially diluting the classic and well-loved franchise of Ghostbusters. You know, 30 years ago, the original was released. The music from it, the lines from it, I mean, they're quoted in pop culture all the time. Very iconic.
Yeah.
So they had a lot to live up to with this.
Yeah. It is a canon piece.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So it was released on July 15th, and it had an okay but not great opening weekend. Right, it's in terms of sort of like the money that it made.
It didn't
blow it out of the park.
It wasn't a blockbuster opening weekend.
Right, it wasn't a blockbuster opening, but a decent opening, but not great. It stars four talented women: Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones, Kirsten Wiig, and Kate McKinnon.
Yeah,
and it's a remake of the 1984 classic, starring some of our fantastic actors.
Classic
like Gilmore,
actors, yeah.
Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Annie Potts, Ernie Hudson, and Harold Ramis, who they actually dedicated the film to.
Yes.
Yeah, which is awesome. So, you know, they had, like I said, they had some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, and because it was a remake, it deals with everything from, you know, the beginnings of Ghostbusters, how they came together, how they got their name, their logo, their headquarters, everything. And
right.
There are cameos, so that's not a surprise all in and of itself, but I didn't know all of the cameos that were going to be in it, so I'm not going to talk about any of those because they are fun.
They're really fun
when they show up, so it's still only 1 week or so after the release, so we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to spoil too much of it because we are sort of right on top of it just coming out. But it was, I don't know. So what's your overall impression?
When I left the theater, I think that their opening weekend was so poor because there was already so much press coming out saying, this is a bad movie, this is a mess.
Right.
And that kind of thing where the movie was already a hot button anyway, I think if there had been one in a million articles that had come out and said this is a horrible movie, that's the only article they would have run.
Right.
Because that's the only way that it could continue to be a hot button topic. And since I think the news and media is nothing but a money-making marketing scheme, it affected a lot of people's opinion. But that being said, when I left, I was thinking, well, you know, I kind of enjoyed that. I mean, it was well made and the ladies were funny, but something felt wrong. And I just couldn't quite put my finger on it. It was like, you know, it could have been better.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. It wasn't what I wanted. But when I heard, you know, this is an absolute mess, I was like, I didn't get that feeling from it.
No, I didn't feel that way about it at all. I didn't feel like it was a mess. I didn't feel like it was problematic. I don't feel like it dissed on the original. I think one of the things I'm noticing about current remakes, I think that here's what they figured out. What they've tried to do before is kind of keep the same kind of characters and put them in new stories. And now what they're doing with remakes is keeping the same narrative structure with new characters. And that, I think, is working out a lot better because you don't have Ian McGregor trying to fill Alec Guinness's shoes, right? You don't have somebody who's trying to take on an iconic role that way. So I feel like they're doing a lot better with that, and that's how I felt about this. My concern going in, I generally don't. If I'm going to see a movie, I try to actually avoid most of the press around it before I see it because I want to be able to go in with my own impression of it. But I had seen actually quite a bit of positive talk about it. Not like reviews necessarily, but talk and people on Facebook or Twitter who were saying positive experiences they had of it as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a little bit of that kind of buzz going in. My fear, given the cast, particularly Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, was that this was going to be the Bridesmaids of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Right? That it was going to be very low humor, that it was going to be very vulgar. And not that I'm against that kind of humor, but it's not my thing. Like, I watch Bridesmaids. I had a friend of mine tell me I had to watch it. It was so much fun. It was going to be so great. And I just, like, I cringe through those movies.
Yeah,
I'm just like, why? Who does this and why? And so I was worried that that was going to be the aesthetic. So for me, I was delighted that that wasn't the case.
Oh,
yeah. They overdid the sliming, you know, a bit for my taste. But, you know, it still was within the story. It might have been gratuitous slime, but at least it was pertinent to the story.
Yeah.
So I was thankful it didn't have that flavor to it.
Yeah, I think that it had, I think it had smart humor.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they used the talent they had well enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the humor could have been much better.
Yeah.
It could have been much smoother because when the humor was good, it was dead on.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that was,
yeah, it was good.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
You finished.
I was mumbling.
Oh no. I was going to say, I went and saw it with Julie,
uh-huh.
Who's one of our ambassadors, and she didn't laugh as much as I did, so I knew she wasn't as impressed with it as I was. And I have other, you know, reactions I want to talk about, too. But I asked her at the end of the movie, I'm like, so what did you think? And she's like, I think they missed a lot of opportunities for really good one-liners.
Yes, they did.
Like, they had all this, like, set up to certain moments. And her example was they hop in the car toward the end, and they're just like, let's go. And it's like, what? Come on, really? Like, that was like a perfect, like, build up moment to something epic that you remember from the movie, and it's, hey, let's go.
Yeah, it was weird. So that had a weird feeling too. It was like, that's it? That's it?
Well, and then I'm like, I don't remember if like what was in the original at that moment that like maybe they were trying not to step on or Like maybe that's part of that feeling is like they really did handle some of the material maybe too carefully.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and that lost some of the humor too.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have a problem with the remake. I thought that we were getting a whole new everything. I did not know it was a literal remake,
mm-hmm.
And I don't mean literal scene by scene and everything like that. I thought that it was a reboot, and I prefer a reboot. If you're going to modernize it, if you're going to bring in new characters for it, I would rather you pay homage and
mm-hmm.
just give us a new story
right.
with the new characters. Because I feel like that they crippled themselves from the very beginning with honoring the old material. That's what I think when I thought about it, that I landed on being the problem with the movie. The reason that it felt awkward at times and not fully realized is mm-hmm. I think that they had too many things on their agenda. You know, paying homage to the original.
Right.
I felt like that there were too many comments made in the film about them being women.
Mm-hmm.
There was one or two that were made. My thing is the 90% of your social media trolls are doing it for the attention.
Right.
And if you seriously think that that is a hot button and it's really a problem, you're deceived by just the simple numbers. You are creating the, and we've talked about this here.
Yeah.
If you want to promote, gender equality or, gender neutrality, you don't constantly point out gender.
Right. You don't call attention to it constantly.
And there was one scene where the four of them were together in the jumpsuits and they were just walking down the street. And I was like, this is gender neutrality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It does not matter who's walking down the street right now. It was
right.
a beautiful scene. It was perfect. Mm-hmm. It was a scene for everyone.
Right.
And so the references to girls and internet media stuff and validating them, I think those were just a little cheap for the people
mm-hmm.
writing the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it distracted,
yeah.
it took you actually out of the film to the media surrounding
it. It took away from the story. I laughed at one point because they read one of the comments
yeah.
on the YouTube video, and I'm like, oh, somebody actually said that about the movie, like, about the trailer.
And see, they have just made that person, they've rewarded them for being a dick. And so
right.
now they'll just go out and be a dick that much more because
right.
they might get quoted in a book, get quoted in a TV
right.
show. They were quoted in a movie.
Right, yeah. That's true. I hadn't thought about that. I did think it was an interesting kind of attempt at subverting the power of it. But like you said, it just things like that just give validation to things you don't want to give attention to or shouldn't want to give attention to.
Believe me, the person who said that had the best day.
Yeah.
The best day.
If they saw the movie, if they see the movie.
Oh, they saw it. They absolutely saw it.
Yeah, I can agree with that analysis of it. And I did notice the constant referring to them not just as women, but also as girls. And especially by the, I don't want to give too much of it away, but by the powers that be who kept, like, talking about, you know, oh, well, these girls or the media.
It's ridiculous.
It just, mentions of it.
Yeah. It was distracting. And,
yeah,
quite honestly, I think Liam Hemsworth was distracting.
You know, I have conflicted feelings about Hemsworth. I was really glad he actually had something to do with the plot.
He did?
Yeah. When they actually tied him in at the end, and I don't want to say what because we're trying not to give spoilers away, but had they not done that, I would have been like, I mean, at least that was some moment. And it kind of, I don't know.
They didn't establish enough relationship for us to care about him.
Well, it was just so random at the end. Oh, I don't want to
Everything know. Was. It was. I mean, even the scene, which is it is completely fleshed out in the film, but it has appeared in several clips where everybody knows that Hemsworth is playing the new Potts character, where he's the administrative assistant for the Ghostbusters. They can't afford
right.
to pay anybody, so they have a incompetent admin. But Hemsworth is playing a really, really, really stupid beautiful person, which is a stereotype.
Yeah, it's a trope, and it's a, you know.
And when he came on and they did that scene, it felt like that the movie stopped and they were doing a sketch comedy.
Right, yeah, because that it completely stepped out of the story.
Yeah. And it was
in
just
order
Hemsworth doing,
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, you've got to be kidding. This is going on too long. There's no endearment here. It's a one-man act. And after that, it was almost like he just had to be on the scene to make an appearance to stay in the show. But between the interview and the part where he actually enters the story, I have no endearment toward him. When he's standing outside screaming, I have a right to be a Ghostbuster. It was like, well, hell, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, when that showed up and that interaction happened, I was like, he hasn't been engaged with them at all.
No.
He's been running off to, you know, auditions or, you know, not answering the phone or whatever. Like, just,
explored the whole thing with my cat and the luggage. And all of that was extremely humorous if they had taken it even a step further.
Right, yeah. It kind of hit a wall. And you're right. And I agree with the whole, like, he's calling out to them wanting to be a Ghostbuster and wanting to join the team. And it's like, it just felt like it came out of nowhere. Yeah. And I wonder if that might be an editing thing, too. Maybe they edited out a scene. You know, sometimes it doesn't take much, like, to establish enough of the character to make that connection.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to take much to do that. Like one scene or maybe two short scenes together would have given the depth for that, where he actually showed an interest in what they were doing.
Yeah.
Because as it stands, there was no moment of connection between him, you know, seeking out and kind of checking into what they're doing other than to say, oh, you got a phone call and, you know, there's a ghost at this place, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, and going back to the whole thing about sort of like the gender neutrality of it and not pointing out gender, I think having that trope was another step in the wrong direction. It's like,
I agree.
You've got to be kidding me. How come, I mean, when, I'm trying to think of her name now. Yeah, Annie Potts played
Annie
that
Potts,
role.
Yeah. I was just going to, yeah.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like,
and by the end of the movie, you loved her.
Right, yeah, and she was competent and she was able, but she was also funny and sarcastic and,
she
you know,
had her
enough
own
of a balance.
You totally wanted to know
right.
her.
But you, yeah, exactly, you wanted to be her friend.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling, and I don't agree with this, but I have a feeling that the reason why that might have been, they might have had him be that character was to have, like, they felt like they needed some sort of balance because they did treat the other characters so well. Like, they were competent and able and smart, and they had good conversations amongst each other. And, I don't know, like, maybe they felt like they needed some sort of comic relief, and that's what they were throwing it in there for. I'm not defending it, because I really don't think it worked, but...
Yeah, but if you want to talk about sexism, I mean, that's objectification.
Oh, it was entirely, entirely. And it was funny because he walked onto the screen, you know, when he came in and was interviewing, Julie's like, oh, wow. And I'm like, oh, you didn't know he was in it? And she's like, nope, I had no idea. And so it's like, yeah. And I said, I'm sure he'll have his shirt off at some point in time.
Yeah.
Which he didn't actually
but he
in,
did.
Like, a scene, but he had the pictures of himself with his shirt off.
It just felt wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Felt bad. Felt icky.
Yeah. But... I do want to talk about some of the good things that I appreciated about it, which was the treatment of the female scientists, particularly Holtzman, because I absolutely adore her.
Oh, my God. It was my favorite character.
She was my favorite character. Like, I want to cosplay. Like, I don't cosplay, but I'm going to cosplay her.
Yeah.
And I might have to get, you know, a perm in order to do it, but... I really do. I really, really loved having a female mad scientist or mad engineer. Like, I just loved it. And I thought she did a great job in the acting, and I thought the writing for her was really great, and her, you know, performance carried it.
Her timing was great.
Her timing was good.
Oh,
I mean, like, oh, God, she was just right on.
Yeah.
And I'm so delighted that is a representation for young girls.
Well, and she
know,
was so empowered.
Oh, my God. Like, no, there was never a question. There was never a question.
Yeah. I thought it was awesome. Interesting. When we left the theater, and my husband said she was his least favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
just
bad.
Annoying. Too much. Too much.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't feel that way at all.
No. Loved her. Loved her.
Loved her. Loved her. I loved the costumes. I loved that there was never a boob window in any jumpsuit.
Oh, at least they didn't do that. God.
Yeah, there was nothing that was too tight. Nothing got ripped. I mean, they had all the
opportunities. And they were still attractive. They were still lovely.
They were
comfortable.
Absolutely gorgeous and powerful and capable of kicking butt and taking names.
Leslie Jones, second favorite.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I was worried about what they were going to do with that role. And if anything, that was my biggest pleasant surprise from the film, is I thought that her role was beautiful. The idea that when you first enter that scene and she's in the ticket booth in the subway, and I was like, oh, my God, this is not what I expected at all. And then when she met the Ghostbusters, and just throughout her story, you got a complete story of her.
Mm-hmm.
You knew who she was, where she had been, and you just wanted to sit down and have a talk with her.
Right. Well, that was good. That's good writing and good character development. And it's what they could have done, like you said, with Chris Hemsworth's character and what he fell short of. And it didn't take – It doesn't take long.
And they obviously have a talent for it. That's why I'm saying that I think they got stuck on some bullet-pointed agenda items.
Yeah.
And that was somebody had the great idea that to put Hemsworth in this film and make him stupid, that would be hilarious. It's like, calm down.
Right.
Don't throw all the cooks in the kitchen.
Right.
And remember how good you are at what you're doing, because like we said, we both said, there are some dead-on good humor in here.
Mm-hmm. There is. And I hope people do check it out and do see it for that, and do see it on the big screen, because I thought the special effects were outstanding.
Beautiful.
I thought they did. It was a beautiful movie in terms of the special effects, especially knowing that they had rebuilt, all of New York City. That was all not really New York City. So, they did a really good job. So,
yeah. And I had heard, wanted to ask you this. I read one review today because I was curious to find out some of these people who call it a mess. Someone say that they used way, way too much action.
Yeah. I thought the action was quite balanced. I mean, they had a lot of scenes where there was a lot of talking and a lot of, dialogue. And I don't know, did you feel that way?
No, not really. I kind of enjoyed it. And I think when I talk about, for instance, how I felt like that a remake was a bad choice, that it should have been a reboot, because I think one of the things that they did extremely well was, modernize their weapons.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was gonna point that out too. Mm-hmm. Like the sleekness of their weapons, and just her cleverness with how she designed them. I just was like, at the end when she gives them the additional weapons, I was just like, wow, these are really, cleverly thought out, and you could tell a lot of time and energy went into the creation of that, and I love that part.
I think that part of the reboot, you're still paying homage, because they're still in the jumpsuits, they still have the backpacks,
and they still pull them over their shoulders they did too, and
but it makes sense to have, a bat belt.
Right, exactly.
And it was really smart. Once you begin, and I love the way that they did that scientific process where they're lugging the equipment on a cart.
Right.
And then someone says, hey, we need this. And then they're like, okay, this isn't powerful enough. Hey, we need this.
Right.
It was a great evolution of scientific thought. Now, I thought they spent too much time saying a bunch of really big science words. Yes, okay, we get it. They're supposed to be smart. Isn't it great? Right. Women can say big words. I think that their actions and the way they handled themselves could have communicated that better. I mean, the scene with them in the alley with the new weapons was an exact example.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that we watched them, you know, testing it out, and that they had the little, you know, outline of the ghost that they were all shooting at. And I really felt like we got to see their evolution as Ghostbusters in a way that we never saw the evolution of the other characters.
Yeah, and that was fun. Oh, I
it was fun.
I love the really backstory, the two friends, and
I did too.
They did a touch on Kristen Wiig's background about why she did a 180. I think as far as Melissa McCarthy is concerned, I think they could have let her loose a little more.
Yeah, I thought so too. She was very reined in.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of appreciated that because I really was worried it was going to be the show between the two of them of, you know, just two, the crazy kind of comedy stuff that they do. So I was glad that it wasn't that. But I think you're right that it was maybe a little too tight on her.
I believe, just like in a comic book, with between a comic book writer and an artist, I believe if you understand your pairing well, you you know how to write for that artist. You know how to draw for that writer. And Melissa McCarthy is extremely versatile. She's a physical comedian, but she also has good timing. And I think if you had played her character up as the over-enthusiastic, I mean, she was so excited about finally finding an apparition and maybe making her over-enthusiastic with marketing or make her over-enthusiastic with helping everybody or whatever.
Yeah.
Not extreme like Patty was. I mean, Patty was her own person, and she dealt with things in a very loud and physical way. I don't know. I just think that there's she has a lot of facets that you could have dealt with that wouldn't go anywhere
missed
near
opportunities there.
The movie you were talking about. What was in the movie? Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of good range. So the only other problem that I had was I did not completely feel the urgency of the big scene at the end. The big boss. I'm not quite sure they delivered that story well enough to make me feel like that New York was in danger.
I think that ties back to the Hemsworth, the lacking in the Hemsworth story.
Good. Yeah.
I think that connects to that, where if we had more investment in him as a person and a character, we would have felt more urgent.
Yeah.
I also felt like some of it, again, I feel like maybe something was edited out. Like, I didn't understand why he had them all, like, frozen and in a dance
position. Oh, yeah, they totally chopped that thing up. They had
I don't know what, like, something just, like, really...
That was weird.
Missed there, and I couldn't understand some of what was kind of happening with that end scene. And so, again, like I said, I think it was poorly edited, and... If we had had more love for Chris Hemsworth, if there had been more connection between him and the Ghostbusters, I think that end scene would have been more.
Well, if we go back to what you were saying before about how it does not take very much to create agency. It takes a lot of skill, but it doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't take a lot of words necessarily to create agency and endearment. Yep. Because if we look back at the original... There was a lot of build up to this big boss because it was associated with someone close to the Ghostbusters. Now, that's exactly what happened in the new one. But what's the difference?
Right.
Well, Sigourney Weaver goes to the Ghostbusters. She's hesitant. She's kind of embarrassed, but that sure as heck something going on in her apartment. She has a one-on-one with them. They discuss it, and then we see her alone and vulnerable and get overtaken.
Right.
Well,
right.
She has a neighbor, Moranis.
Yeah. Yep.
We see him very, very little, but we completely know everything about him.
Right, right.
And when he gets taken over, it's humorous, but we feel bad for him.
Right.
Now,
right.
He couldn't have...
We already have enough empathy for his character.
Yeah, and Hemsworth could not have had... any less screen time than Moranis did. There's no way. And we loved Moranis more.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well done. It was well done.
Yeah. Yep.
But I want another one.
Yeah, I do too.
Did you watch it all the way to the end?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so all right, this is what we'll leave you people with: is you need to there. It's really, really popular to do the scene at the end.
Yeah.
There's one at the credits, and then there's one all the way.
And I think the one, well, and I think the credits, while the credits are rolling, there's something for you to watch as well, at least in the beginning of it, which I think is really them getting their money's worth out of Hemsworth.
Oh, like yeah.
Screen time in the movie.
That's what I wanted in the film.
Right, exactly. You wanted to look at him and laugh and enjoy.
And when that came in, I was like, ah, that's what they left out.
Right. Like that, like that, you know, that fun element of it, and it was just missing, you're right. So, yeah. But, yeah, definitely stick around to the end. Yeah, there are a lot of people left our theater, and I was like, you people are dumb.
Silly.
Sit down, you're going to miss it.
Because that one little scene at the end, bam. It's like, oh, everybody who stayed, everybody went, oh.
I know. We did too. I was like, yes.
That was fantastic.
All right. Yeah. So, and I like that. I liked it. It was good. Yeah. I want another one too. I love Holtzman. I already looked on Amazon today for Yellow Glasses to try to figure out how I'm going to actually cosplay. I'm going to see if I can cosplay her for Rose City Comic Con next month in Portland.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, see, and I've never cosplayed before, so this is, like, serious business for me if I'm, like, actually seriously looking into cosplaying me. You know, I have, and, you know, I'm not a scientist, you know, I'm a PhD, but I'm not a scientist like that, but I relate so much to that, like, just being so out there with, like, your thinking and being around the people who think you're just nuts, like, that I just, I love her. I just love her.
Our new screensaver. Mm-hmm. Holtzman! Well, summer's a great time to catch up on your TV watching, to binge those episodes or an entire season, or maybe dig around for that movie that you said, I'll save that for later. We are giving some recommendations for the kind of things we're binging this summer. Regina, what have you got going?
I just discovered Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Have you watched it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's hilarious.
It is so funny. It is so good. You want to talk about good writing?
Yeah, it's really
funny. Oh my God.
It's great nothing like I thought it was going to be.
It's not, I didn't know, I mean, I had heard a little buzz about it, but not a lot. And I didn't know it was a musical, and I just didn't know anything about it. And I started watching it, and I'm like, where have you been my whole life?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, where have you been my whole life? And I was trying to figure it out what it is I like about it so much. And I'm a sucker for a musical. I will be the first to admit that I love musical theater. Just much everything.
You really like it?
I really do. Well, it was what I thought I was going to do. Like, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Spend, you know, my high school years and my early years in college training to be in musical comedy. So, you know, yeah, it definitely has a warm space in my heart. So I tried to figure out what it is about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, because you can fail with a musical on TV so easily.
Ooh,
like,
yeah,
you know, there have been some bad ones. But I tried to figure out what it was about this, and it really is that juxtaposition of, like, these, like, peppy and cheery or dark and dismal songs that just kind of, like, they're managing to work the music in really well.
Yeah, they do.
And it's really smartly written music, because you can get really cheesy really quick, and they're not doing that. And there was one song in the episode I just finished. I only started a few days ago. I'm halfway through the season, I think. Right?
That's a good sign.
Binge, yeah. She's singing a song, and she's like, I'm the villain of my own story.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Just brilliant. I mean, a brilliant turn on the tropes, and, you know, all kinds. It was just great. Like, they just did a great job with it. Anyway, so.
And they really explore a lot of musical genres, too. I mean, this just isn't, you know, Oklahoma.
Right. Exactly. Like, you're not just bursting into song when you're feeling good or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they have.
And a rap battle.
Yeah, they had a rap battle. Oh, God, I wish I loved that one. But I love the, her boss when he's having the guys over, when he does the, like, disco, I'm having a few people over song. Oh, my God, it was so funny. And I'm like, I'm watching it by myself, and I hate watching comedies by myself and laughing out loud. But I just can't help myself. I just keep laughing at it. So I definitely recommend it. It got four Emmys, nominated for four Emmys, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, I'm totally deserved one for the opening credits music.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What's your recommendation for streaming, Rhonda?
Well, a few weeks ago, I think it was July 4th weekend, I was looking around for some things to watch while my mom was here and discovered that on Amazon Prime, you can purchase cable network channels.
Right.
Monthly or annually or whatever, just like everybody always says they wish that Time Warner Cable would do, you know, it's like...
Right, it could parse out.
Yeah,
can't
we do the buffet thing?
And,
But they have a few channels. They don't have them all.
Right.
And Stars is one of them, and we got a 7-day trial, and they've got several Pixar and Disney movies out there, which we have burned through like crazy. But they also have Ash versus Evil. And we've been binging it because we have a 7-day trial. I was very pleasantly surprised with this. If you are an Evil Dead fan, I assume you're already watching it because you're an Evil Dead
right.
fan.
Yeah.
And you know already that it is very much attuned to the original films, and it keeps that heart and that mood and that genre. It does everything that Ghostbusters could have done.
Right.
Continues the story. It has new characters, but they fit. But they keep all the gallons and gallons of blood. They keep the chainsaws.
Nice.
They keep the
important parts.
Yes, all of the important parts. And it's it was just a really pleasant surprise. And they've got Lucy Lawless. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Right.
Bruce Campbell.
Okay.
You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
So yeah, I highly recommend it. If you've got 7 days. You can do the trial, Ash versus Evil, if that's your thing.
Awesome.
Yep.
That's very cool. I've been considering that. I really like that we have these options, like they have HBO Now, so you don't have to have. I mean, I think it is the way of the future, as it should be. We should be able to pick and choose what we want.
Yep.
Yep. Cool. Well, thanks for joining us. Next month will be the last of our summer movie series.
Ooh.
So August will be the end of our summer blockbuster podcast series. We'd love your feedback. If you'd like to give us some feedback about Ghostbusters, if you saw it, please go to thegeekembassy.com and let us know what you think. We have some great movies that end sort of the big hurrah, I think, for summer movies. Is coming out in August. We have Star Trek Beyond, Suicide Squad, Pete's Dragon, and Kubo and the Two Strings. So there's a lot coming out.
Yeah, the big stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll probably see Ben-Hur, but that's just that's a nostalgia thing.
Yeah.
Well, we are the Geek Embassy. I'm Rhonda Oglesby, the wild card ambassador, telling you there's booze in the blender, and soon it will render the frozen concoction that helps me hang on.
Perfect summer drink, right?
Right.
And I'm Regina McMenemy, the lead ambassador for the Geek Embassy. If you haven't already, please pre-order my book, Mothering the Game, available right now on Inkshares. Check out my Twitter at DocLiz with 2 Z's. For details and updates on my writing projects. I'm working on the book. I've also started writing for another website called Screen Prism, where I'm doing a little bit more detailed analysis of movies and television, so you can check that out as well. But I repost those on the Embassy, so they'll be cross-pollinated.
Cool.
The Geek Embassy podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podbean. You can check out those links at thegeekembassy.com. And definitely check out the content we have coming out from our ambassadors. This podcast is edited by Ryan Broom at Desert Tree Media. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, get your geek on!